got there? I can't really tell.
Yeah, you do.
Which bisect is it?
It's a line for the people.
Intersection, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, since you were first, Nick, you could tell us, why is that the right answer?
Because you know that the...
tell them.
Okay. So, the points that are equal distance from these two points are along a line straight through that arrow perpendicular to this line. And then likewise here. So if you know that these two, you know, these are all equal to the same length, and then so the points from, and then you know these two are equal all along here. So where they meet up, then they're all equal.
Great. All right, good job. So part of the reason I asked for three, you can leave the marker up there.
There can be only one circle in each.
What's that?
What was the question?
Yeah, there is only one in there. So that's a natural question that comes up, right? Because I just told you, yeah, there's a unique circle that passes through all three points, and you can say, oh, I kind of believe that. Why is it, or might it be true? In fact, once you give this construction and you prove that it's right, you kind of see why it's just one point for as long as I haven't done something weird, like put two points on top of each other. The reason there's a unique circle is because, well, you have two distinct lines. They're going to intersect at exactly one point, or at most one point. And if they don't intersect, then they must have been parallel, which meant I asked for like 3 points on a line. In which case, something we will probably do a lot of in this class is we will say that this line through them is a circle with infinite radius. So I will talk about, I will add in a point at infinity with some regularity, where I talk about not just the points in the real plane, but maybe somehow points at infinity. And at some point in this course, you will get to see some of the real power of what's called projective geometry, where you go beyond, say, just coordinates and you add in a line of points at infinity. And we'll do all kinds of fun stuff with that. You can do one of the things with that. You get a first taste of it today. I asked for three in the hopes that one of you would screw it up. Just for us, we have a learning moment, but you guys did a great job. Let me just tell you some mistakes that I have seen. It's not really a mistake, but sometimes people draw all three bisectors because they said, well, you know, it has to be equidistant between these two, and this pair, and this other pair, and they draw three bisectors. But as you all noticed, two is enough, so that's the more efficient algorithm. But the other observation you can make is that this problem would seem to be a problem about circles. And when we think about circles, you think about equations of degree 2, right? X squared plus y squared equals the radius squared. But it turned out to be just solving a set of linear equations. Do you have this geometric view of solving linear equations? Right, a linear equation, a graph of a linear equation is a line. Solving a system of them is finding a common solution to a set of linear equations is to find the intersection of a set of lines. So it seems like it was a quadratic problem, but now it looks like just a linear problem, a linear algebra problem. And we'll see that that's sort of true and sort of not true. The quadratic terms are hidden in the descriptions of these lines, but we will maybe by the end of the class show how to do this in a purely algebraic way. But I claim that if you got through high school algebra, you know how to write the equation of a line, you know how to write the equation of a bisector, you can actually write out these two linear equations and solve this algebraically. So we're going to do a much more general version of that. Does anyone see an eraser? That's so frustrating. The cycle continues. Crime begets crime. How will we ever pull ourselves out of the mire? Okay. I will. I don't have any. Does anyone have a napkin I can, or a tissue or something? Unused. Don't be gross. Alright. Today we're going to introduce the first real computational model that we're going to talk about. It's going to be the most important computational model for this whole class. It is not the ruler and compass. But the first thing we'll do with it is to try to get a sense for how you can do stuff like ruler and compass with this other model. This model is called the real RAM. And the reason we're going to introduce this is, goes back to this a very fundamental question of how do we take some description like this and how would you represent it in a computer. So what I did, I representing it on the board, for instance, just representing the input, on the board was no problem. I just draw three dots and say go. I put three dots on the board and represent it. And you can imagine taking the what you might call the synthetic geometry view. So synthetic geometry is geometry that in which all of the statements, all the theorems, are just derived directly from the axioms. And usually those axioms are Euclid's axioms or modern versions of Euclid's axioms, i.e. from Hilbert or someone else. And in that case, points, lines, circles are purely abstract entities. And you can imagine you just have a thing you call a point. You say, this is a point. They have a relationship. I can have a line, which goes through two points. But the much more common way of representing these things, especially points, is via an analytic view, which would be coordinates. So you may recall that Descartes in the 17th century introduced the Cartesian plane, added coordinates to geometry. So when we talk about a point, we can think about it not as just some abstract thing, right? Euclid defined a point as that which has no part, which is a set theoretic notion, right? It's a kind of set that doesn't have any proper subsets. But if you do the Cartesian view, you're going to take your points and you're going to represent them, say points in the plane, as some pair x, y, I'm going to write it like this, in R2. So real here does refer to the real numbers, and this should set off some red flags. If you're studying any things that say numerical analysis, you can't really store an arbitrary real number. There's all kinds of seemingly magical things you could do if you could store an arbitrary real number, because the amount of space you might need to store a single real number could be arbitrarily large, so you could solve undecidable problems in this model, which is unfortunate. We won't do anything that weird. We're going to stick with some pretty basic problems, and mostly we're going to talk about, imagine that you can store real numbers in a random access memory model, right? RAM, like RAM on your computer. Let's say points here, we'll associate them with pairs. And now, the thing that you get from analytic geometry is you can replace a lot of the work that was usually done by applying different axioms with just applying algebraic manipulations. So I can stop stalling. Thanks, Todd. So if we were not in the plane, but say we were in in three-dimensional space, I'd call it R3. When I talk about R2, R3, I can think of these as spaces, geometric spaces. But you can also think of them as vector spaces. And this is a point of a common point of confusion. And let me just write this. So if I have a set of, say I have a point that's in d-dimensional Euclidean space, right? I'm going to also use the term Euclidean space to refer to R2 or R3 or RD. So it's in d-dimensional Euclidean space. It has d coordinates. So there's some x1, x2, all the way down to xd. Now, when you write this, and if you study linear algebra, you know that, well, R to the D is not just a space, or just some set. It's a vector space. It has all kinds of nice properties. And when I write it like this, look, I'm writing this point. It's like a vector. And so here's the important thing to remember, that points are like vectors. But points are also not vectors. Points are points. And there's going to be some simple operations that we do, that we operate on points, and sometimes the result will be vectors. We can do operations with points and vectors and maybe end up with another point or another vector. And if you're scientists, we know you have to keep your type straight. And just keeping your type straight often can kind of point you in the right direction. So let me tell you what the basic operations will do on points and vectors. And you know them. If you've done any linear algebra. What are the basic operations of linear algebra?
Addition
and subtraction. So yeah, you can add them. This is important. You can subtract them. Scalar multiplication. What else can you do? Shout it out, I can't hear you. What do you do with vectors? Dot product. Yes. Dot product. Anything else?
Cross
product. Cross product. Can I do a cross product on two vectors in RD?
Yes.
Who said yes? Yes. Yeah. If D is 3.
So wouldn't you get a volume?
Yeah. We'll talk about the cross product today. You guys remember the cross product?
Yeah.
Cross product tells you about volume. How many vectors in RD do you need to cross product? Cross product. I don't think 2 is enough. But you could have something equivalent. We'll
talk. Just go off.
There are exterior products, but don't worry about that. I'm not going to write it on our list. The one I will add in here is something called the L2 norm, which is an operation. These are all vector space operations. So let's make this a table where we have vectors and points. If I do addition of vectors, that's just coordinate-wise addition. I have two vectors, I just add their coordinates. Easy. So if I have u and v, I just take u plus v, I'm going to write it like this, and it's fine. For points, we're not going to do addition. I mean, you can add the coordinates. It's not a meaningful operation on points. It's a meaningful operation on vectors. Subtraction, same thing. Okay, u minus v. For points, yes, this is allowed.
Should length second degree?
Well, let's just write this down. So, but the point is that the result is a vector. So if I subtract 2 points, I'm going to allow this operation, but I'm going to define the result to be a vector. Because the difference is, if I have 2 vectors here, u and v, or 2 points rather, if I add them, what does it mean? Well, I need it to have an origin. So if this is the origin, this is u and v, add them, you draw this parallelogram, and this is u plus v. But if I had a different, if I sort of transformed the space and I end up with the origin somewhere else, but the relationship between these points stayed the same, that is if I translated everything by a rigid transformation. So nothing got scaled or stretched. Maybe I even flip it over. That gives me the space of what are called Euclidean transformations. If I do that and I say the origin is over here, then I might not even be able to fit this on the board. I would end up with a point, say u plus v over here. So the addition of points, if I just treat them like vectors, is really dependent on where the origin is. It's not intrinsic to the points and the relationship between the points. Subtraction is different. If I put the origin here, u minus v is still going to be a vector of this length, right, in this direction. And if I put it over here, it'll be the same. So it gives me a vector which has a length equal to both the distance between u and v and it's going in the direction from U to V, or from V to U. Okay, so we're going to allow subtraction that way. Scalar multiplication, if you have a scalar C, and our scale, our field that we're going to work over is always the real numbers, so you can take a constant times a vector, and again, that's just component-wise, coordinate-wise. And that is, if I take C times X, it'll give me a point with coordinates C, X1, all the way up to C, X2. Question?
So are we somehow implying that points living in some kind of affine space?
Yeah, we are. There is a... for the sake of everyone else, I'll just say yes. And we can talk about more. There's always a way to turn a set of affine points into a set of linear vectors in one dimension higher. And we will do that today. But let me allow that to evolve naturally. We're going to discover that rather than claim it. All right. So scalar multiplication, nope, not going to do that with points. Dot product, you sometimes see it like this, u dot v, or sometimes you see it as angle brackets uv. I will almost always, if possible, write it like this, u transpose v, which is, right, yeah, this is treating these as small matrices, 1 by d matrices. So we take the transpose of the first one, it becomes a row, and the next one's a column, and that's how you multiply them, and you get a scalar. Right? You get a real number when you do the dot product. We're not going to do that with points. The L2 norm is also the length. It's also called the Euclidean norm. It's written like this, the length of, say, some vector v, and it's defined to be the square root of, the positive square root of v transpose. And again, we're not going to do that.
I think the reason all of these are nodes is because we don't have an origin.
Right. Yes. Yes. So this is our first attempt at freeing the points from a specific representation of them. Right. Like if I asked you for in the Euclidean setting where the points are just these abstract things, like there is a point, there's another point, there's another point. It doesn't make any assumption about the representation of the point. In fact, there is no representation of those points. But once we give coordinates, we are fixing a representation, and we want to avoid making statements which are too specific to the particular representation. Now, that might seem a little strange, because obviously, if there is a specific representation, we're also going to have to represent the answer. But in a strictly formal sense for types, these operations are not really defined. So it looks like you can't really do anything with points, but you can, and let me talk about some of the points you can do with points. Let's talk about combining them. So combinations. Some of these you still won't be able to do with points. If I have a v1 to vn, are vectors in Rd, and I have some constants, alpha 1 to alpha n in R, this is Rd and this is R. Okay, so these are vectors and these are just real numbers. I can take a couple different types of combinations. The first one, linear combination, right, is just some, it's a new vector u, which is equal to the sum from I equals 1 to n of alpha I vi. So this is standard stuff. Basic linear algebra. Foundation of linear algebra is linear combinations. There's non-negative combinations. This is has to be linear and alpha I, all the alpha I's are greater than or equal to 0. So they're all non-negative. Okay. The third kind is affine. Okay, these are linear combinations where it just so happens that the sum of all these alpha i's is equal to 1. And I'm going to draw a picture once I've got the full list, and you'll see what these all look like. And the last one is convex. And this just has to be non-negative and affine. So this is the origin. This is, say, some A and some B.
So these are all vectors.
These are all for vectors, yeah. But it will turn out, and this is an important thing, that these two operations are valid also for points. And we'll see that in the picture right now. So if these are just, say I just have two vectors, and I look at all linear combinations of these two vectors. Okay, the linear combination of these two vectors, they're linearly independent. You can describe the whole plane just by these two, by linear combinations of these two vectors. That is, I could take any point up here, x, and I can write it as alpha times a plus beta times b for some real numbers alpha and beta. That's what we would say, that a and b span the whole plane. If I limit myself to non-negative combinations, does anybody know what I get? One word I'm looking for begins with a C. It's a cone. So if I can only take alpha and beta to be non-negative, what I get is a set of possible vectors that about affine combinations of A and B. Has anyone seen this word affine before? Okay. Affine combinations are going to be all points on the line between A and B. You can see, at least if you believe this picture, you can see why this is an operation that's reasonable to do on points. If you have three points in R3, the set of affine combinations will define the plane through those three points. So if you ever go to the term an affine subspace, it's like a linear subspace that's been shifted. So usually if we talked about a one-dimensional space in R2, one-dimensional vector spaces, one of the rules for vector spaces, right, they have to have zero vector. But you notice that this doesn't pass through zero. So it looks like a linear space that's just been moved, been translated. And now convex combinations, well, they have to be what? They have to be non-negative and affine. So they have to be in the intersection of this cone and this line. And I can draw, it's just going to be this line segment. Okay, that's the case for the two vectors. If I had three vectors, or in fact three points, what I'll get is the triangle spanned by those three points. So it would be the set of convex combinations of those three points. Any question here?
Why is it called convex? Isn't the space like not convex or convex?
It's called convex because the set of convex combinations of any set is a convex set.
Okay.
Gotcha. and actually, that will come out directly out of the definition. But we'll also talk about convexity in much more detail. Much more detail next week. All right. So that's combination. So the main things that we will do with points are either affine or convex combinations, or most often, we will subtract them, reduce a vector, and then we can do anything, any of the vector operations on them. So the goal for today is to get to something like a comparison model. From the real RAM model, we want to build an abstraction on top of it so that we get something like the comparison model. So you know the comparison model usually comes up in sorting. You're given a set of points or set of numbers, and they say sort them. Sort these. And what you're given is just the ability to compare two elements. Is A greater than or less than or equal to perhaps B? In fact, if you use like C++, does the standard template library have a quick sort now? Or you have to pass it a comparator, right? You have to decide, you have to tell it how to compare entries, and then it can do a sort. And how long does the sorting take if you're comparing? N log n time. If you can do more than compare, if you can say, do things like actually look at the magnitude of the numbers, you can do things like bucket sort and graded sort, and there's even linear time sorting algorithms, depending on the underlying model. But if you, all you know is that how to compare elements, n log n is the best you can do, and it's a really, it's a pretty useful, simple model. And so we want to develop a comparison model for geometry. Yeah, so we will pretend now that you do have coordinates, yeah. So there is some, it's true that in some sense the origin is fixed, but semantically you should think of that then as a vector.
Right, because if you give me coordinates, the summation is the same.
It's true, it's absolutely true. The reason this is useful to think about it is that if you ever find yourself with just two points and just adding them, chances are the result is not a meaningful thing.
I guess what I'm asking is, are you doing like relative points, like you say this one, and give me some distance or something instead of telling
you? No, I'm going to give you the coordinates of the points. It's true that I have fixed it, once you're given a representation of the input, you have an origin. It's hard to see now, but I promise that this will keep you out of trouble if you remember. There are all kinds of things. Like you say, oh, I have two points, I want to find the bisector between them. You better make sure you're subtracting them before, or at least implicitly subtracting them to produce a vector to find the normal vector of the bisector between them. All right. So this is to be compared to, compare again, similar to sorting. And part of the other reason this is useful for us is that once we have a comparison model, an idea of what it means to compare points, it will help us to abstract away a lot of the arithmetic, a lot of the with this arithmetic will come all kinds of numerical problems, and also comes with it is the real difficulty of representing real numbers accurately. And so with just comparison model, we can avoid a lot of that. And so what we need is something we'll call linear predicates. Who knows what a predicate is? It's a function that comes out to true or false usually. Well, we're going to allow for possibly a third answer. Here's the kind of questions we want to answer. If I have a line and a point, I want to say something like, is P above or below the line? If I have a triangle, A, B, C, I want to ask, is the triangle ABC oriented, is ABC clockwise or counterclockwise? If I have, say, in R3, if I have some plane and a point, I want to know, is, say, P above this plane pi? And a similar one, which is related to this problem we started with, if I have a circle, which is the circumcircle of three points, A, B, and C, I want to know, is some other point P inside, outside, inside or outside the circle? Okay, so these are all yes or no questions. Well, I guess if I put the yes or the no here, but is P inside or outside the circle? In all these cases, there's a degenerate case. When I say degenerate, I mean, well, P could be actually on the line L, in which case you have to decide whether you want to say it's above or below, or you can say that maybe in addition to just yes or no, it says it's actually on, yeah.
To be able to answer this question, so the viewer needs to be on some reference point.
The what?
For example, is the point above or below the line? How do you define above or below?
Yeah, we're gonna have to do that. It's true. Right. It's important, right? So above and below. Above and below is
Same for this clockwise. So it means that I'm either in this side of the triangle or that side of the triangle.
Yeah.
So how do you define this? Yeah.
So we're gonna define it with respect to the coordinates. To talk about above and below, you're going to have to choose one coordinate to be the y-axis or the z, you know, what counts as up, which counts as down. But even then, there's some trickiness in that, well, let's do this one. If the line is vertical, then all kinds of other problems show up too. These are things we're going to have to deal with. Okay. Any other potential pitfalls you see? These are things to keep in mind as we go through the construction. They're not new complaints. Okay. So it turns out that you can do all these with more or less the same computation. But these are all really the same question in different guises with just minor modification. And they're called linear predicates, probably for the same reason that when you computed the circumcenter of the circle, you found it as just a solution to a set of linear equations. It's actually that same kind of set of linear equations that we're going to use to solve these, and I'll show you what it looks like. So my preference in learning in general is to do not just try to learn it, but try to discover it. So what we'll do is I want to walk through how you might discover a general theory for all these kind of linear predicates. So let's start with the simplest one. This question of, is the point P above or below the line? So we're going to say above is if I move it vertically along the y-axis, if I hit the line. If I hit the line, if I have to go down to hit the line, I'm above it. If I have to go up to hit the line, I'm on it. And there's some case where maybe I'm already on it. And so these predicates, what we'll do is we'll say that they evaluate to, they map to something like negative 1, 0, and 1, where 1 is like above, this is on, and this is like below. So to define this line, Let's actually immediately see why these two are the same. If I define the line by putting two points on it, A and B, now, if I say that A comes before B, then I've directed the line in this direction, and now I go A, B, P, and whether P is above or below this line only depends on whether or not the orientation of the triangle ABP is counterclockwise or clockwise. once I tell you that A is left of B. So these two, I think you should be able to see, if I define a line by two points, these two should be quite clearly the same. No, that's yes, no, they're absolutely crazy.
So how do I know A is to the left of B?
Let's say that the user promises you.
Oh.
They say, I have this line, I have A is left, B is the right, and I want to know about B. And that's why this version of the question is a little bit better. Right? It does away with a lot of the above and below. But I leave it in here because there are times when we're going to want to have a special dimension. One dimension which is different from the other ones, for which we will talk about above and below. And sometimes that is a dimension that we'll add ourselves. That is, they'll give us points in 2D, and we'll add a third dimension. And we'll talk about above and below with respect to that third dimension. This is related to that 2.5 dimension stuff I talked about last time, where you have something in 2D and you lift it up. In that case, it'll be clear what above and below is. And we'll get to that pretty quickly. All right, so let's see if we can try to figure out how to answer this question given the coordinates of A, B, and C. So you're given, for every point A, B, and C, you're given two coordinates, an X and a Y coordinate. And here's A, and here's B. And then there's some point C. And we're going to try to figure out that orientation. So to start with, let's pretend that A happens to be 0, and we just care about checking if they're actually collinear. Because this is really what you spent a lot of time in high school doing, was checking if, you know, there are these linear dependences. So let's imagine you have a C here. Okay, so when is C actually on the line between A and B? Well, you would just write the equation of the line for A and B, and in fact it's really easy because there's just some slope, right? There's some slope of the line AB. I made it almost zero, but that's not important. The important thing is that B, or that this line here, right, L is a set of all points, x, y, we'll just call them points x in plane, such that x is equal to alpha times B, or alpha in alpha. I'm already cheating. I already broke the rules. Does anyone see? Yeah, I did this whole scalar multiplication thing. Guess what? This is actually B minus A. A was 0. This is what I mean. If you spot these things. And in fact, once I stick this B minus A in there, then I won't have to make this assumption about A being equal to 0. Okay? But for now, let's just pretend this is okay. It simplifies the notation. And now if I want to check if C is on this line, what does that mean? It means that Cx is equal to some alpha times Bx, and Cy is equal to some alpha times By. And so I solve these two equations. What do I get? Well, alpha, I just move the Bx over, move the By over, and now these two must both be equal to alpha, so they're equal to each other. So Bx, well, the other way, but Bx over Cx is equal to By over Cy.
Isn't that flipped?
But it's also true. It is flipped, but it's also true. This gets tells me one other thing. I can rewrite this as cross-multiplying here. Bx Cy minus By Cx equals 0. This should jump out at you if you're thinking about your linear algebra days. What does this start to look like? This is just the determinant of a matrix that looks like this, bx, by, cx, cy, the thing that the determinant has to be equal to 0. Okay. And again, if you remember your linear algebra, we use the determinant often to tell if some linear system is degenerate, singular. And that's exactly what you have here. If you have a two-dimensional linear system, a 2x2 matrix, and its determinant is 0, it means that there's some linear dependence. What does it mean for C to be on this line? It means there is a linear dependence. It's technically, when A is not 0, it's technically an affine dependence, because we're ignoring the origin. But in terms of vectors, this is what you get. Okay, we're going to write this as the determinant would just be in C like this, where it's understood that if this is a, if I put a 2x1 matrix inside another matrix, this is a 2x2 matrix. It's this 2x2 matrix. And so this is just this. That'll be a very useful shorthand. Any questions?
Yeah. So if A wasn't 0, we could just do determinant B minus A and C minus A.
Exactly. So I can write that right here. Can it, is this invisible for you guys? Can you see this part of the board? Okay. So let's do that right here. So the actual answer for the collinear case, remember we were just checking, we just wanted to find one check to see if C was on the line through A and B. It turns out we just have to check if the determinant of B minus A, C minus A, is equal to 0. All right. So I took B and C, and now I turn them into vectors by subtracting off A. Right, that's equivalent to moving the origin to A. And that's fine for us now. And we check if the determinant is 0. That checks if from the perspective of A, if I see B and C are on the same, in the same direction, or on the same line. If I expand this out, in full, what is it? It's the determinant of this is equal to the determinant of bx minus ax, by minus ay, cx minus ax, cy minus a. Wait, is that right? Ay, that was good? I think that's right. You can expand the determinant, and you get bx minus ax times cy minus ay minus, help me out, so was it c, maybe dy minus ay times cx minus ax. Okay, separate this off. Okay, you can expand this some more. It gets a little bit, gets pretty long at this point. But when you expand this again, what will happen is the subtractions will seem to kind of disappear for a bit. And you get this you get three terms. I'll have to write it out for you. So you have a cheat sheet, so it helps. Bx cy minus cx by minus ax cy minus cx ay plus ax by minus bx ay plus ax ay minus ax ay. Good, well this one goes minus 0. And what each of these in turn, there are more determinants. Some alternating sum of three 2x2 determinants. Ever seen that before?
Something.
Yeah, right? The cross product, sort of. Remember your cross product? Well, here's the short answer. I'm going to go all the way up here. I'm going to elevate this. This is just the determinant of columns. So the claim here is that this matrix, D minus A, C minus A, is the same as taking the determinant of the points now lifted onto the plane Z equals 1. So I took 3 points in the plane, and I gave them another coordinate, a 1. So you can think of that as that I just lifted them up into the 3 dimensions, and I just made it so that that plane is lying at Z equals 1. So that's that plane here. Z. Now, this is actually a way to really take questions about points and turn them into real questions about vectors. Because now I don't have subtraction here anymore. But by lifting them up and having this extra coordinate, what I'll get, this 1, is it's actually this 1. It's the same 1. And hopefully, the 100 or so times this will come up throughout the semester will help give you some intuition why this is true. And I encourage you to maybe just play with some examples to see. The point that we get, though, is that this simple determinant here, which is we didn't have to do any subtraction, we just lift them up, take the determinant of the points, and that tells us the orientation. But this also corresponds a little bit better, I think, with the geometric intuition of what a determinant is. Right, the linear algebra view of the determinant says this is going to tell you something about linear dependence. It tells you about linear dependence if it's 0. But if it's non-zero, the interpretation is that the determinant tells you volume. Right? Is the volume of the parallel pipehead? Is this something you've seen? If you have 3 vectors in R3, you can build a parallel pipehead and you take the volume of that by computing the determinant. Similarly, actually just in 2D, if you have 2 vectors and you build a parallelogram, the area of that parallelogram is just the determinant of those 2 vectors, which are 2x2 matrix. There's something else about this which is special, is that this is the first example of that phenomenon I told you about last time, which is that this is going to be the right answer, not just for 3 points in the plane, but for D plus 1 points in RD. But there's a notion of orientation of a set of D plus 1 points in RD, and we're going to get it right from this. It's in fact going to answer this question, this 3D question, if I have, for instance, 3 points in a plane, and I want to know about the 4th point being above or below it. I have 4 points in R3, I lift them to 4 points in R4, and I take the determinant, and will again tell me whether, in some sense, this tetrahedron is oriented inside or outside. Okay, so this kind of orientation in higher dimensions is kind of inside and outside. But you remember the other thing about, I skipped everything. You know, the determinant tells you volume, right, but not exactly. Remember the quirk about the determinant? It's quirky. Sometimes it gives you a negative volume. It gives you a signed volume, and that's really important because this didn't just tell us about whether, in the end, what you find is it doesn't just tell you about whether the C is on the line through A and B. If this is positive, then you know it's on one side of the line, and if it's negative, it's on the other side. And so you can draw, pretend it's against A, B, and C, right? This area is either positive or negative. In this case, if I take and it's going to be the case that if I were to reverse 2 of the vectors, right? If I were to take A, C, B, that would swap the sign, would reverse the sign of the determinant. And that's good because A, C, B has a different orientation than A, B, C. And so that change in orientation is reflected in the permutation. And it's also reflected in the computation that we get. So this process that we worked out just by brute force algebra here, where we take the points and we add another coordinate, this is called homogeneous coordinates. Okay. So sine volume via determinants tells us orientation tests. Let's put it to use. Let's do a simple problem. In fact, let's do a nice one like this. Here we go. If I give you two line segments, and this is one you can work out now. In fact, I'll label the points A, B, C, D. Here's the challenge. I give you one predicate, and I'm going to call it the CCW predicate. So CCW of three points, U, V, and W, is equal to 1 if the triangle U, V, W is counterclockwise, -1 if triangle U, V, W is clockwise, and 0 otherwise. The reason it's usually defined in terms of counterclockwise is the right-hand rule, but go there for now. Now, here's my question. If I give you four points, A, B, and C, D. So I give you the points in pairs here. And I want to know, do these two line segments intersect? I think you can check if they intersect just by doing this operation. You may have to do it more than once, but you can do it.
Yeah, so if...
Although, don't spoil it for everybody else. I'm going to let you guys think about this for a little bit, because it's worth thinking about. Just by checking if a triangle is clockwise or counterclockwise, you can check if these two line segments intersect. Then we'll take some conjectures. Meanwhile, while you're doing that, I'll also write the definition of this operation. This is sine.
Do you mean line segments or lines?
Line segments. Line segments.
You mean counterclockwise output, right?
In the order that they're given to you.
Okay.
So if you're given, think of it as a, like this is a function in a computer program, you're given three variables. It needs this. Thank you. accurate. I couldn't tell if you were just done or if you were just still thinking in a thinking phase. No? There aren't too many interesting calls you can make to this function. You only have 4 points. You have to give it 3 of them. There's only 4 different ones. Sets of points, 4 different triangles you've been asked about. All right, who's got an idea how to do this? He was first. Yeah.
So C C W A B C should be equal
to D. Okay, wait. So C C W of which one?
A B C.
Should be different from what?
C C W of A B C.
These 2 points are on opposite sides of this line. That's what this checks. And these 2 points, the first one checks, these 2 points are on opposite sides of this line. And the second one checks that these 2 points are on opposite sides of this line. I think not too much difficulty to show that you could prove that this is correct. But this really does imply that the line segments intersect. What's neat about this is most of the time, I think if I just gave you this problem directly, I said, here's 2 line segments, tell me whether or not they intersect. The usual course of action, I think, 9 out of 10 programmers is, let's compute the intersection. Right? I know linear algebra. I did this in high school for all of high school a million times. I wrote out simple linear equations and I found the solution. This doesn't give you a solution. One of the things it actually, in fact, it even avoids doing division. It just tells you that the solution exists. It actually gives you a non-constructive answer to this query and saves you actually some what I might call dangerous arithmetic. Is there a question?
Yeah. Well, could there be a roundabout solution, another?
I'm sure there is. What was it? What do you think?
So what you could do, let's say you fix any 2 points, let's say A, B.
Yeah.
And you do the CCW on the rest of those 2 points. Mm-hmm. If the sign is different, then you know that they are on the different sides and they will never intersect.
Good, that's the first line. You want to check if they're, you want to do the opposite. You want to do the contrapositive of this.
Yeah, the other thing. So if they're different, so you know that they don't intersect. Mm-hmm. However, if they're the same, then you pick another 2, do the same. If they're different, you're done. Otherwise, you do the last one. If all the time they have the same value, which means they don't intersect.
Yeah, so there I can give you the space of all solutions here, if you like. Since there's only 4 points, there's 4 sets of 3. You see that? Just by leaving out this one, we have this one in here, this one. So there's four different predicates I could compute here, reordering them. 2, 3, 4. And let's say that none of them are collinear, so they all come out to 1 or negative 1. So I get some set of answers if I if I do them all, right? So I get true or false here. And what I'm doing here is I want to just check that these are, I can put in each cell here whether they're equal or not equal. And for any one of those, I can get a different algorithm. Where I just, this is a very short way of, to logically describe the subset of good cells in this table. You can do it with a tree, so you can maybe save yourself one of these operations. I think that was your goal, right? You want to do only three predicates some of the time, or like short circuit the operations. Like if you happen to find out that this is equal to this, you'd never do this. And you can save yourself a little time doing that. But it's not so, it's not critical to the main idea, which is that this is a useful operation, because not only do you save yourself division if you don't re-implement some linear system solver to answer this query, is if you have a robust implementation of CCW, you can just plug it in. And since, like I said, well, at least I promised, that many of these operations are all the same, they're all just determinant computations, if you can recognize that the computation you're trying to do can be done with just one of these determinant computations, you can outsource that to someone who did a really good job on it, and not have to hack it together yourself.
So do you mean computation harder than solving sets of linear equations?
It's equivalent. Yeah, so...
So what do I gain by outsourcing it?
You get...
Simplicity?
Well, if you... Are you going to want to write a system, linear system solver or a determinant solver? Mm-hmm. Especially one that does real arithmetic correctly. Or what's sometimes called exact arithmetic. So this is a great way of abstracting many different kinds of operations in computational geometry into one simple model that we're going to say is related to comparison. Right? Because comparison does have this property that it's either what, less than, greater than, or equal to. And in fact, it generalizes the comparison model in a strict sense. So if we talk about sorting as a one-dimensional computational geometry problem, this is exactly the comparison model. Let's check. If the input is some set of real numbers, x1 to xn in R, and my comparison is something like, I'm going to write it like this, less than, equal to, a is equal to what? 1 if a is less than b, negative 1 if a is greater than b, 0 if a is b. How do I do this, write this as a determinant? Well, I'm comparing two numbers, I lift them up on the plane, or the line, really, y equals 1, and I just look at the sign of the determinant of a, 1, b, 1, which is the sign, this determinant right here, is the sign of a minus b. Right, so the question is a minus b less than or equal to 0, which is the same as asking is a less than or equal to 0. So it's actually the comparison model, but with the interior geometry. Let me assert one more thing, which is that not only can we go down a dimension, we can also go up a dimension. I don't really have 5 minutes to do it, but I will.
I think it's being in the minus one.
Did I get it backwards?
It should be minus one.
Yeah.
A is the origin.
The other way around is a sign. And Someone should check to see if I got the order right here too. Because that might be clockwise. You'll have to check, you have to remember your right hand rule. So let me write down the general form of a linear predicate of even. The input is going to be some set of points, P1, PD plus 1. These are all points in RD. So I have one more point than the number of dimensions, or linear dimensions. And the output is just a sign of the determinant of P1, 1, P, D plus 1, 1. This is a nice square D plus 1 by D plus 1 matrix. And the interpretation is, this is the orientation of the D simplex. I'm going to tell you what this means. D simplex is, a simplex is a generalization of a triangle. So we have 2 points on a line, you get a line segment. That's a one-dimensional simplex. If you have 3 points in the plane, it gives you a triangle. That's a two-dimensional simplex. If I have 4 points in R3, I get a tetrahedron. That's a three-dimensional simplex. And in general, if I have D plus 1 points in RD, the generalized shape there is called a simplex. That's the shape. The shape is actually the convex, the set of all convex combinations of those points. So we can interpret this predicate as telling us the orientation of the simplex, and I'll draw you at least a projection of a 3D picture. If I have 3 points like this, you can see that this tetrahedron I get from these 4 points, if I want to view this now not as a as an orientation test, but as a what we call plane side test, where this is the plane through these first three points, and this is some other point P, and I want to know if P is above or below, you can see that as I move this down, this point P down, at some point it'll hit the plane and we'll get zero. And then it will pop through on the other side. And in order to do that, it actually had to turn the tetrahedron inside out. It had to change the orientation of the tetrahedron to go from above to below. And so asking questions like above and below is the same as asking questions about orientation of this tetrahedron. And this will be the general form of our two-dimensional linear predicates. I think I'm more or less out of time. Are there any questions? So quick summary, so we went from 2D, simple questions about 2D, and we abstracted them up into linear algebra so that we could answer, we could see how they generalize one dimension, but also give us information about high dimensional geometry. So we can really answer simple queries about high dimensional geometry, and the main reason, one of the main reasons at least, was to not have to repeat work in implementing these things, to recognize the common structure in many different types of problems. This gives us a simple model that also allows us to talk about algorithms without talking so much about the arithmetic.